Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our weekly programme looking at all things tech-related from a blind and partially sighted perspective. If you want to get in contact with us, please do. You're more than welcome to drop us an email, either a written email or a voice message to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk at rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll have part two of our conversation with Charmaine from the Accessible Learning Lounge, the technology training platform. We'll also be hearing about how you can access the 3D spatial audio technology, Action Audio, during this year's Wimbledon Games. And we'll have a demonstration of the Braille Note Evolve Note Taker from Humanware, which of course has been getting a lot of talk lately. So looking forward to hearing more about that. Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran are joining me this week. Welcome to both of you. Let's see what's going on with everyone this week. Jackie, anything from you this week?
Yeah, I've come across a typing tutorial which anyone can use, whether you are blind or visually impaired, or whether you work with someone who is. This, I think, could be for any age, but I would say it's quite good for young typing learners. It's called KeyQuest, so that's KeyQuest, and KeyQuest has a capital K and a capital Q, and it's all joined up. You can download it from the App Store, you can download it from the Play Store, the Microsoft Store, and it enables you to learn to type but have fun at the same time. Apparently it's very accessible. I can't endorse it because I haven't used it, and I don't personally need to use it because I've been typing since I was a kid. But there are people out there who find, you know, keyboard a bit of a chore, and, you know, particularly young people who are perhaps in mainstream who, you know, use their phones a lot, use their iPads or even Braille note takers, so they don't come across a QWERTY keyboard as often. But this is apparently a really fun way to use it. And also there are games that you can play as well. And it's not like one of these drill programs where you sort of, you have a rhythm of learning each key above each other on the keyboard. This is a bit more fun. So if you're into wanting to learn, or you know somebody who does want to learn, then KeyQuest is maybe a good way to have a look at this app and see what it's like.
That sounds cool. I don't really know what it was. I hated learning touch typing at school. and I don't even know why. But now, of course, looking back, it's probably one of the best. That, along with Braille, is probably one of the best skills that I could have learned at school doing touch typing. But
yeah,
I think part of it was because it was just a bit of a drag, you know. It was just typing just random letters, and then it would be like simple sentences, but it just sort of, you know, didn't really do anything. You were just pressing letters. I can't for the life of me think what the program was now that I used. It would have been about 15 years ago. And yeah, it just gave you different letters to press. And, you know, sometimes it would be typing out different sentences. Sometimes it would be just getting you to move, you know, to the right, move your fingers in the right ways to get your keys. I remember every time you got a letter wrong, it just basically used to shower you. Like, genuinely, it would just go wrong and repeat the letter. It's like, right, thanks. Yeah, that's helpful. I do remember as well, this really bugged me, where sometimes it would get you to do a capital letter, but it wouldn't say capital. So it would say like F, and you'd be pressing F and it's going wrong. I'm like, no, it's not. I can feel the dots. That's F. And someone would look at it and go, oh no, it wants a capital F. It's like, right. Great. Yeah.
Yeah.
But of course, that's just that particular app. If it makes it more fun, because that's what I probably would have taken to it if there was something more interesting about it, rather than just, okay, you're just sat pressing letters for an hour.
We had a really robotic method. I'm so glad though that I stuck with it because, as I say, I was about 9 or 10 when I came across my first manual typewriter, big clunky thing. We all had them in the classroom, sitting on a big long bench at the side of the class, and somebody would come in and put the typewriters on the desk when it was a typing lesson, and my goodness, they were big hefty things with the carriage that just swung across and you had to return. But we learned to type, and the teacher that taught us, she had a big reel-to-reel tape recorder, and she used to put this music on, and you would type this drill: AQA AZA AQA ZAQA, and then it would move on to the next key: SWS SXS, and so on. And that's how we learnt. It was kind of like a drill thing that we did it to this tune, but it was surprising how quickly we actually got to grips with typing. And like you, Callum, I think it's one of the best things that you could ever learn in your life is to type and to read Braille, if you need to use Braille. But for me, they were the two pivotal tools that has carried me into adulthood. And working with young people, I'm really anxious for them to learn to type in whatever way works for them. I mean, there's Azabat, there is Doorway Online. There are numerous accessible programs now that you can use to start typing. And that's why I kind of thought, KeyQuest, that's another one to add to it. So, give it a go. If you're not a typist or you just kind of tap at the keyboard just with one finger, it doesn't really matter how many fingers you use. If you're happy and you can get from A to B, so what? It doesn't matter. But if you want to type and you want to pick up your speed, then it is a really good thing to learn.
I mean, I actually sort of I accidentally taught myself to touch type, because when I was very young, I could see, and I had a toy Barbie laptop, and one of the games on it was, as I called it, typing cutter. I didn't realize that TUTOR was tutor,
Fair
so
enough.
I played typing tutter quite a lot,
That's a good name for one,
and
though.
on the
I like that.
screen. And on the screen there was a picture of a hand, and the different fingers would highlight. But just as you said, Jackie, in order to win the points, I just looked at the keyboard and stabbed the various letters. But as I started to lose my sight, I found that it was quite helpful to play that game and use it to help memorize where the keys were on the keyboard, not realizing what I was in fact doing was teaching myself to touch type. So when I officially lost my sight, and my mum said, "I think it'd be a really good skill for you to learn," she says that I learned in about an hour.
Wow.
But the point is, I'd actually laid the groundwork for years playing this Barbie game, on typing tutter.
Typing to us. I think that's what I was at school, to be fair. Whenever they say, right, we're doing typing. There you go, though. Key Quest. Yeah, give that a go. Yeah, it sounds an interesting one. Natalie, anything from you?
Couple of things from me this week. I had my first FedEx delivery this week. I've heard of FedEx before, but I've never used it. And I ordered something online, and that was their delivery method of choice. But I fell out with it pretty quickly because it was due to arrive on Monday and said it was going to arrive yesterday, but needed to be signed for, and I wasn't going to be in. And it said, "Don't worry, you can sign in advance and have it, left in a safe place or with a neighbour or whatever." And I thought, okay, it's fine. So I clicked the check delivery options and it said, "No delivery options available." I asked AI and it said, "Yeah, look for one of these options." I said, "Those options aren't there." It said, "Yeah, sorry, phone this number." So I phoned the number and I got a robot that was just as useless that said, "You can edit stuff online." Eventually, I cracked it. So what I had to do was sign in at least as a guest. So although I had the tracking number and it had the details on screen, I still had to sign in as a guest. And then that allowed me to access different delivery options. But in order to find any of those options, you had to go to the very bottom of the screen. And this is a bit of a general tip to people. If you suspect there's a pop-up on screen or there's content that you don't think is loading, try jumping to the end of the page by doing Control End or Command End, I think, on a Mac and working backwards. Because quite often, if a pop-up's been badly designed, as in the case of FedEx, that's where that content will appear for somebody using a screen reader. And I was able to get my parcel delivered safely. But it was a very frustrating and slightly stressful half hour because I was in the delivery window and I thought I can't risk it being redelivered and redelivered because I'm away this weekend, so I'm not going to be about at all. And I don't want to be tracking this package all around the country.
Yeah, that happens all the time, doesn't it? Where you click on something and either nothing's happened. I find it with dates quite a lot. So like it'll say, choose a, I don't know, choose a delivery date. But then you click it and then nothing happens. But then at the very bottom of the screen, there's this, either it's like a, the ideal is if it's drop downs, you know, day, month, year. If it's one of those calendar things that pops up, then that, oh, hate those.
Oh, they're horrible.
Yeah, I have those as well. I know Martin was getting frustrated recently when he said the whole Iceland delivery thing was fine up until choosing the day or the time that you want, and he said it is just a nightmare. And I have had the same problem with booking flights on EasyJet as well, where everything's okay, it's great, but the only problem is the calendar. But of course, you need the calendar to choose your fly from and fly to dates. It's crazy.
Obviously, this won't work for everyone. I find they're not too bad on the laptop because they're usually formatted as a table. So you can just do, if you've eventually work out that it's there, you can just do T to get to table. And then at the top, you can sort of tell which month you're in. And then you can sort of scroll through the dates from there. Whether pressing enter actually selects it is another, you know, hit and miss. But I find on the computer they're not too bad. On the iPhone, it is a nightmare because they just sort of dynamically scroll. So I had one the other day where I was looking to see, to try and book a, I can't even remember what it was now. I think it was like a delivery date for something. And I'm sort of flicking around the calendar, but unbeknownst to me, and I only found this out when my wife looked at it, that it was kind of, as I'm flicking right, it was also taking that as a swipe right to go to the, you know, the next bit of the calendar. And my suspicions were, when I was looking at the next few days and they were all unavailable, I thought something's not right here. So eventually gave in, got a pair of eyes on it, showed it to my wife. I said, "Sure, none of these dates are available." She said, "Yeah, that's because you're looking at June 2030." I'm like, how the hell? How did that happen? Well, I want to book in advance. Well, yeah. I like to plan these things. I like to plan it way in advance when my shopping's coming. Yeah. This is where I'm really hoping that as AI becomes more like agentic, this can really help us there. Like it's got to, hasn't it? Just, you know, select this date for me and then,
You'd hope
you know,
so.
job done.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
It's a tough one. It's hard to give advice on stuff like this as well, because every website does it differently and every screen reader handles it differently. And it's very rare they get it right, to be completely honest. Well, I've been playing with a new email client recently. There's one being released that's actually been created by a blind person, and it's called Quickmail. And this is. It's designed as a, I mean, anyone can use it, but it's designed specifically as a kind of screen reader first email client. And it's really nice. It takes me back to the days of, does anyone remember Outlook Express back in the day?
Yes.
Oh, that. So for people who don't know what this was, obviously, this is going back. Again, this is when I first started using a computer,
Yes.
so this is probably going back to like the Windows XP days. You had you could get full-blown Outlook, which was like your emails, your calendar, your tasks, basically the Outlook that we've got now. But you also got, I think it was pre-installed. You also got Outlook Express, which is basically just a beautiful little lightweight client just for managing your emails. And Quickmail is pretty much exactly the same. You just tab around it. You've got a section. Once you get it set up, which is really simple, you've got a section for all your accounts, your different accounts, because you can have more than one email account on there. Press tab, you've got a section for all your folders. Press tab again, you've got the inbox or the folder that you're looking at. You press enter, it opens the message. You press escape, it closes it again and jumps you back to where you were. It's just brilliant. It's nice to have. I mean, Outlook is accessible, but it's pretty bloated.
I mean, I use Outlook a lot, as probably most of us do, but it is, Outlook Express. Yeah, I used to like it back in the day. It was great because, as you say, it was a cut down version of Outlook. So, it just got you to where you wanted to be. You could put in multiple accounts. You could use your inbox, your sent items, your outbox, and your junk mail. And there wasn't much else to it really, but it was just so easy to navigate. And yeah, this is what I think, this is Kelly Ford, is it,
It is,
who's
yeah.
produced this one?
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't tried it. I'm wondering, is there a calendar in it at all, or is it just an email client?
From what I can see, I don't think so. I think it's just an email client. And to be honest, I'm kind of all right with that. I mean, if they do bring a calendar type thing into it, then that'd be great. Especially, again, it would be designed to be accessible. But I think sometimes it just, you kind of just want to stick to one thing. You know, if it does emails well, then I sometimes feel like kind of leave it at that. It's had a, this is very much in development. You know, it is beta. I think everything's beta nowadays, isn't it? To be fair, but because everything's just moving so quickly. But yeah, it does have a few issues. When I first got it, when I first downloaded it last week, which then this is why I didn't talk about it. It didn't play too nicely with the iCloud because I've got an iCloud email address. And I had an issue where when you, it wasn't always marking emails as read, so they weren't always kind of syncing across properly. And when you deleted an email, rather than landing in my like deleted items or my trash or whatever you call it was ending up in my junk mail folder, which was a bit odd. But I raised it, and within a couple of days that was fixed. So it's working well. It's working really well.
See, I suppose that is the thing, if it works with different email accounts, because I like Outlook, but it works very well at work because we have an Outlook-based email system or email provider. Whereas personally, I use Gmail, and Gmail and Outlook, I kind of feel, tolerate each other. they don't integrate as smoothly as I would like, but trying to use Gmail on the web, I don't find as easy. I don't
No.
like the Gmail app as much as I like just the Apple Mail app on my phone. That's my preferred app of choice. So it's just kind of it finding one that works like the Apple iOS app, where it's kind of mail provider agnostic. That would also work on a laptop would be good.
Yeah, so I mean, this one at the minute at least is only on Windows, but it is good. It is good. I'm really liking it. And as I said, the developer Kelly Ford seems to be really on it, and it's open source as well, so people can contribute and add to it. Slightly frustratingly, it's only available through GitHub, which makes total sense because that's where all of these open source projects live. But it is a bit convoluted to actually get at for downloading it. The easiest way is to, if you go to, if you Google Quickmail screen reader, GitHub or something like that, Quickmail GitHub, you should find it. Then you want to go to the releases section. And at the very bottom, of the release notes, you should then find the link to get the installer and then get it up and running. Once you get past that bit, then it's really simple. Like, it couldn't be easier. But yeah, unfortunately, they're just a bit tricky to get to just because of the way that GitHub works. But we could always demo that, demo finding those files if people want that. Well, another busy week for us. Let's get into it. This is Tech Talk.
Coverage of this year's Wimbledon Tennis Championships will be more accessible than ever thanks to the 3D audio system Action Audio. I'm joined now by Tim Devine, Chief Invention Officer from developers of Action Audio, innovation company AKQA. Tim, welcome back to RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks, Hal. It's great to be back.
Well, Tim, if we could start at the beginning. For people not familiar, what is Action Audio and how does it work?
The idea behind Action Audio is to give people more agency to make their own minds up about what's happening in a tennis match by using the data that's created you through the Hawkeye system, so the adjudication for the line calling, and we turn that into abstract sound cues, so non-verbal sound cues that can complement the commentary and fill in the gaps that the commentary doesn't or wouldn't normally fill.
It's interesting you mentioned that, Tim, because I suppose for people involved in commentary, people listening to and used to listening to commentary, you're being told what's happening, and you don't really, I suppose, get the opportunity to use that information and sort of think about the game for yourself, I suppose.
That's right. Yeah, when we started exploring the idea of action audio, the idea of, something that wasn't using words to describe what was going on, we first kind of broke down what made sport, and specifically tennis was the first sport that we did it with, what brought the tension in it. And one of the things that people have enjoyed the most about it over the years have been knowing how close the ball is to the line, which when we were designing it, we picked up that in one of the co-design sessions as meaningful because it contributes to tension. It's an expression of the professionalism, I suppose, that's on a tennis court. So, yeah, people knowing how close the ball is to the line creates more tension and complements the commentary in a way that doesn't necessarily come through as in as much detail as when it's spoken by a commentator.
For tennis, Action Audio has been used at tournaments like the Australian Open, Queen's, and Wimbledon, of course. What's the reaction been like from blind and partially sighted fans?
It's been great. It's by far the most kind of admired piece of work that I've done in my lifetime, to be honest. People seem to really appreciate it and get a lot out of it. And it's a work in progress, and this year's a really big year for us. We're exploring lots of ways to do it in stadium, in the courtside, and this year we're doing it in a broadcast context in collaboration with Hawkeye for a new product that they're launching called Hawk AR, which will complement the audio work that we've been doing with a video overlay. So on BBC iPlayer, there'll be an inclusive feed that effectively is action audio plus video with augmented graphics to kind of highlight the trace of the ball, the court, all sorts of things to kind of complement what action audio is already doing, but really is more reflective of the fact that blind, low vision, fully sighted, partially sighted is a spectrum, and that people have different needs, and so there is an opportunity to create a more rounded service by using video augmentation.
Is action audio difficult to pick up for new users if you're used to experiencing that TV and radio commentary for sports that we've been talking about? Does it take a while to get into the rhythm of a tennis match?
Yeah, there's definitely a nuance between how complex it is and how easy it is to kind of just pick it up and start listening to it. What we found during our design phases has been that if we focus on using sounds that are as familiar as possible, like what happens in a blind tennis match with a rattle in the ball, people can pick up on a lot of those things. And we have really simple onboardings right before it. So we're not doing a huge amount of work, but in combination, it all kind of adds up. So we've got where the ball is as it moves through, using the rattle of the ball, which shot type, so forehand, backhand, and then how close it is to the line is just the closer it is to the line, you get a few beeps, and the less close you get one beep. So They're really simple sound cues and doesn't take too long to pick it up. And we've got a good onboarding for people to kind of learn how to decode it.
What are some of the other applications for the technology? It's not just tennis that ActionAudio has been used for.
Yeah, we've done it for basketball, and that was a very different dynamic to tennis. And we were really, unsure whether that would be a thing that would work for ActionAudio, but actually, it has the same qualities, I suppose. Like there's moments of tension and release and anticipation, and there's a real place, and there's gaps in the commentary that even for radio commentary, there's gaps in the commentary that aren't filled by anything else. So we've really found a nice niche for action audio across all sports, and that works with football, and we'll be going into other sports over the next year with our partnership with Hawkeye.
And how was Action Audio developed? How much testing and feedback was there from blind and partially sighted people?
Pretty close. We've had some really great times over the years. We put a lot of effort into not having the answers, I suppose. We take a process which is sort of like co-design, where we create some provocations. Not everyone is a sound designer or knows how to talk in terms of sound. We all have kind of an understanding of words, like how we can describe sound, but not all of us are kind of used to talking about sounds and the quality of sounds, and not all of us are kind of familiar with what data is when we talk about data. And not all of the co-designers are tennis fans. We want to be able to bring in people who are not necessarily fans of the sport, but are interested in exploring it. So, there's sort of three areas of interest and specialism that is pretty rare that we get people who are good at all three. And so, we've had some really good moments where we'll do a few days of design and people will go away and make their own sounds and bring them back to the next session. And we're really trying to kind of just it start with a whole period of education, I suppose, like what is data, what is sound, what is sound and data, what is sound data and tennis. And then, as we do that, people start to have ideas, and then we try and either facilitate the development of those ideas or they've done it themselves in the past. So it's been a really collaborative process and super rewarding.
Well, how can tennis fans access Action Audio during this year's Wimbledon tournament?
Sure, it'll be available on for all centre court games on BBC iPlayer, and yeah, we're looking to pilot this year to do it with the visual complement from Hawkeye and HawkAR, and hoping that all going well, it's improved after this event. So we're in a constant process of development, but then yeah, hopefully it scales to all games next year, all matches next year, and then other sports by the same time next year.
Well, where's the best place to find more information about Action Audio and follow along with updates from the team?
Sure, you can find out more from action-audio.com, and reach out to us there if you have any questions or would like to participate in any of the design sessions. I've had loads of people reach out over the years, and really, really open to including as many people in the process as possible.
We look forward to this year's Wimbledon Tennis Championships being more accessible than ever, thanks to Action Audio. Tim Devine, Chief Invention Officer at AKQA. Thanks very much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks, Al. It's been great.
Today, I'm going to give you an overview and a small demo of the BrailleNote Evolve, which is coming out very shortly. And I know a lot of people are quite interested in this unit because it's a Windows 11 laptop, essentially with a Braille input keyboard. So the Evolve is on the table beside me, on Jackie's toy table, and I'll give you a quick overview before I start it up and you can have a listen to what it sounds like. On the top face of the Evolve, on the top left corner, is your escape key, and moving your hand right over to the right-hand side in the top corner is the forward delete key. Going further forward, the Braille keyboard occupies the kind of middle portion on the top face. So you have your six Perkins keys with your dot seven on the left, which would be your backspace, and dot eight on the right, which would be your enter key. between dots 1 and dots 4, there is a cross. There is no center OK button in the cross. There are just four buttons in a cross shape, left and right, up and down. And they are for navigating around menus and just features on the Evolve. Below the keyboard are some extra keys. First of all, in the middle, you have your space bar, which is sort of below the cross. On the left of the space bar, there are three keys. The longer one on the top is the shift key. The ones below that, there are two small buttons below that. The left one is the control, and the one next to it is the alt key. To the right of the space bar, there are the same three keys, the longer one being your modifier key or insert key. So it depends which screen reader you're running, but that is either the NVDA key or the JAWS key. And of course, it's known as the insert key as well. Below the insert key to the left is the FN or function key, which you do have to use sometimes. And next to that is the Windows key. Below these keys are your Braille display, 32 cells and 32 cursor routing buttons above them. And right at the front are your signature thumb keys with a round button in the middle between the thumb keys, which is your key to press to go home if you want to. On the left-hand side of the Evolve, we have a slightly recessed power button, next to which are two USB-C Thunderbolt ports. So they're both powered, in other words, and you can use these for plugging external devices into. And then further along to the left, going from front to back, is the HDMI port. So if you're in education or you need sighted assistance to use a screen, then you can plug an HDMI cable in there. And then at the very end on the left side, you have the Kensington lock. On the right hand side, going from front to back, it's a button for dictation. So it's the actions button, and there is a dot on this. Then there are the volume down and volume up buttons, and then there is a USB-A port, which is quite useful for plugging in stuff. Oh, and there's also a 3.5mm headphone stroke microphone jack. And that's really about it for the Evolve. It comes in quite a nice case, and it clasps shut when you pull the cover over. It's about, I would say, the same size, this unit, as a Braille Note Touch, but it isn't as heavy. So it is very portable, it's compact, and it does everything that you would expect a Windows 11 laptop to do. So what I'm going to do now is turn it on, and I'm going to just let you hear what it sounds like when it boots up and how long it takes. I'm not going to cheat, so I'm keeping everything crossed that it's going to play ball. So I'm pressing the on off. You don't know if you heard there that there was a vibration, a haptic feedback to tell me that it had started. And as I'm speaking to you, it's got on the Braille display starting, and there's a little circular thing that bowls round and round, which anybody using HumanWare products will be familiar with, that little dot going round and round. And in a minute, hopefully, I'm going to get the indication that it's going to log in. Aha.
Windows sign-in dialog. Enter your PIN 09 ratio 48 Saturdays.
Okay, so that is the voice that you would hear when you turn this on.
Jackie Brown grouping. PIN edit protected blank.
I'm going to put my password in.
Star.
And on the display it says welcome.
Loading NVDA. Please wait. Desktop list.
Okay, so that's me now at the desktop. because NVDA has loaded. So that's kind of what
main
you
menu
will
window
expect.
Dialogue, please wait. New notification from main menu. Main menu ready. .1 of 1 window. List. Braille editor. Key BRF 1 of 10.
Okay. So that tells me that it's in the first item of the Keysoft main menu. Now, personally, I've customized this unit so that I normally have JAWS as my default screen reader by choice. So I have JAWS on this machine as well. But I've put it so that you will see exactly what you get when you unpack it and you set it up. So, of course, I've set up Windows, but when I boot into Windows, when I press the start menu and log in with my password, which I've just done, it goes up to a main menu. And here we have a Keysoft menu. Now, you don't have to have it starting with the Keysoft menu. You can just have it go straight to your Windows desktop, which is what I normally do. But for the purposes of this review, I wanted you to hear what it actually does when it boots up and when you get going with the Keysoft menu. So if I go up and down this menu, which is a default Keysoft menu, this is the stuff that you get in it.
Excel 2 of 10. Braille editor, key BRF 1 of 10. Excel 2 of 10. File manager, key files 3 of 10. Math editor, key math 4 of 10. Microsoft Edge 5 of 10. Outlook, classic, 6 of 10. PowerPoint 7 of 10. Victor Reader 8 of 10. Word 9 of 10. All apps 10 of 10.
So this is what Keysoft menu offers you. So anybody who has transitioned from a previous BrailleNote product into this Windows environment, they've left a nice menu there for people to access the most important applications in that menu. But as I say, for my own purposes, I get my machine to go straight into Windows as a rule, and that's just a very default Windows desktop that I'm used to. But for those who, as I say, are not used to using Windows, perhaps a young person in education, and they're starting to use the Evolve for the first time, then there is this Keysoft menu that comes up by default. You can stop it though, so I'm going to close that menu.
Confirm exit dialog. Are you sure you want to close the main menu application? No button. Yes button. Desktop list. Jackie Brown not selected, 1 of 27.
So I've closed that Keysoft menu, and now I'm in the Windows desktop as you would expect it to be. And that's my preference, but that's what's good about this device, and that's what's really interesting about it going forward, is that you do have options and transitions. So on my desktop, I've got things like
this PC 2 of 27, network 3 of 27, recycle bin 4 of 27, control panel 5 of 27, learn about this picture 6 of 27, Microsoft Edge 7 of 27, NVDA 8 of 27, remote incident manager 9 of 27, Excel 10 of 27.
So that gives you an idea. I was just moving the cross, the cursor keys, if you like, up and down. And if I wanted to go across to the next section of that desktop menu.
DarkuScan Plus 20 of 27. Brother Creative Center 19 of 27.
These are all different applications that I've put on here, like my Brother Creative Center for the printer, and I've got DocuScan.
Brother Utilities 18 of 27. Zoom Workplace 17 of 27.
Zoom.
Word 16 of 27.
Word.
Windows Media Player Legacy 15 of 27. Outlook 14 of 27. OneNote 13 of 27. OneDrive 12 of 27.
So you'll see these are all the regular Microsoft applications on here that you can install yourself. If you have an Office 365 account, you can put those credentials in, and that lets you use Word and Outlook, Excel, PowerPoint. But if you do it through the Keysoft menu, there are add-ons that HumanWare has introduced to make it easier for people to move through the ribbons. If I want to go to Word, for example, I would just do a W on the desktop, first letter navigation, and I would open it, and that would be me in Word. But if somebody else wants to do that on their machine and they want to use the confines of the Keysoft menu, then they're very welcome to do that through the Keysoft menu. So that just gives you a small overview of what the Braille Note Evolve is going to offer. There is a 20 cell version of this unit apparently, but it's going to be the same size, but it's just going to have less cells. And there is going to be a QWERTY version later on this year, and that's going to be a 40 cell Braille display with a QWERTY keyboard. And I must admit that if I had to choose, I think I probably would go QWERTY because I'm a typist, although I can, I guess, switch to Braille as well just as easily. And you can attach an external QWERTY keyboard to the Evolve if you're using the Braille one as well. So you do have both options. So I'm just going to close this down now. And to do that, I'm just going to do space with E, which is the kind of escape, or if you like, closing like the Alt F4 equivalent.
Shut down Windows dialog closes all apps and turns off the PC. What do you want the computer to do? Combo box shutdown collapsed.
So it's on shutdown. Just press enter. That's it. And that's me closed it down. And then it will give a little vibration, which it just did. And the Braille display has closed as well. So that's an overview, if you like, of the Braille Note Evolve, which is imminent for release. And for more information about it, you can contact Humanware on 01933 415 800. That's 01933 415 800.
We return now to our conversation with Charmaine Coe from the Accessible Learning Lounge. So tell us a bit about the sort of lessons that you've got available. You mentioned like pre-recorded lessons and the bundles and things you can buy.
Yeah, so basically how you can access, very easy. You can open up any browser on your phone or on your existing computer and type in the words accessiblelearning.gumroad.com. So that's accessible learning, just like how it sounds, and then .gumroad.com. And then enter, and then when you get in there, there will come a page that's organized by headings. When you get there, it's organized by headings, and the first are tabs that you'll come across that are navigable by form controls or just by with your arrow keys or tab. There will be lessons on a tab for lessons on Mac, a tab for lessons on NVDA, a tab for lessons on Chromevox, and then a tab for you need some help, or you know, another tab for one-on-one tutoring, things like that. When you enter on, you know, if we start with the pre-recorded lessons, let's say you select lessons on Mac with VoiceOver, that tab at the top, or you select the tab lessons on Chromevox, the page will update to only display the recorded lessons and bundles for that lesson. So for that topic. So there will be, and I've organized it, so there will be at the heading level 2 are the titles of the sections. So the first one is section for beginners, and then it goes on with the audio lessons. But right underneath those audio lessons, there are reference sheets, and those are things that I've started to make. Things are always being added there. So if people subscribe, there's a place to subscribe and put your email in. You'll know when I've added a new lesson to the shelves. But there will be lessons followed by, and these are also grouped into bundles as well, and those are on top. You can get the audio lessons and reference sheets bundled together. But these are Word documents. They're not inaccessible PDFs. They're very accessible Word documents that list the main takeaways or commands that are taught in each of the lessons. So if you look for the title of the lesson that you want to use, like maybe how to get started on Mac with VoiceOver or something, or how to get started with NVDA or Chromebox, there will be a reference sheet to go along with it under the same name. So if you're somebody who wants to just listen, then you can listen. They are digitally downloadable MP3 files that show up after you purchase. And then, you know, if you choose to get the Word document, there will be a downloadable link that shows up for you after the purchase is through. And in terms of pricing, I know most of your audience is probably based in the UK, so all the prices that you see are listed in Canadian dollars. But the easy trick to know what it will be in your currency is to divide the number in half. So it literally is in half. So if a lesson is $25 Canadian, or if a reference sheet is $22 Canadian, then you're looking at half of that amount, so 11 or 12 pounds. And then if you're looking at like the tutoring session, it's like, you know, $50 per hour, so you're looking at 25, 26 pounds per hour. And yeah, that's literally how you can convert it and see what the pricing would be.
Okay, that's interesting. Didn't know about that little trick for converting from Canadian dollars. There you go.
Yeah.
And for the one-on-one tutoring, like, is there any kind of sort of, I guess, commitment for that? Like, they don't have to, someone can come straight to you with just one-on-one training. They don't have to go through, like, the lessons first. Like, there's no kind of assumptions there.
Oh, no. Everything is separate. So you come there and you basically, you decide in your head, do you want pre-recorded lessons? What do you want to learn? Do you want pre-recorded lessons, or do you want tutoring, or you want both? And if someone comes along and says, no, I can't learn with pre-recorded lessons, and I get lots of people like that, they go to this tab called one-on-one tutoring. They don't click the, you know, lessons on Mac and lessons on NVDA. That's the other side of the shop where the lessons are. You click this tab called one-on-one tutoring. It says, hey, you want one-on-one tutoring? Great. Click this form. There's a Google form. Click it. It's very accessible that I made. It asks you some questions just so that I'm not like, you want one-on-one tutoring? What kind of homework do I have to do before I pretend to know something? It'll ask you questions, you know, what's your name? What's your level of vision? If you want to share, what are you new to computers? What do you want to learn? You want to share your age group so that I know if I'm dealing with a young person or an adult. And so I actually... It'll do that to you, and you can submit the form. Let's say you, however, don't have the tech skills to fill out even a Google form. Well, don't panic. You can just, there's an email address at the top, and even if you don't even know how to find this website, you can just type volearninglounge@gmail.com into your email program, or dictate it into somewhere if you don't know how to type yet. I have a learning to type program there as well that's suggested, called Typer Online for people. And then, you know, type to me, write to me and say, hey, you offer one-on-one tutoring. I want that. And then I will ask you for, it will turn into an email conversation where I will say, what do you want to learn? And then basically payment happens first. So you get a very customizable checkout link, and you choose your method of payment. You put that down. And then I give you a calendar that I believe I also gave Callum this calendar. It's a calendar through Zoom where you can go in and choose your time with a minimum of 12 hours notice. And then the system just sends out confirmations, Zoom links, and the day of the meeting, you get a reminder 1 hour before, click the Zoom link, and there we are connected. And it does show up in your time zone. So the start times are literally 5 p.m. You're 8 hours ahead of me in the UK. So it starts at around 5 p.m. to right up until past midnight. If anyone is that keen on learning, up until there, and there are lots of times that's available. And again, if you don't find a time in my calendar, we can always think about something else.
Again, something that really stood out to me halfway through that answer was something that I'd not thought about, which was, yeah, that's great, you fill out this form, but what if you don't have the tech skills to fill out the form? It's a catch 22, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you can send an email and fill it out, and you could send an email and tell me what you need. Or some people, they don't know how to fill out the form, but they can read it. So they will open up, my goal is to break down any barrier here. So they can open the form, they can read what's required, and then type out. That's what I used to do when I didn't know how to fill out forms. I'd say, here's all the information you want in an email.
Yeah.
As long as everything's there, it's great. And if you really, you know, have come along, and I've even got people who've come along and say, you know what, forms and emails don't work. I want a call. And this is the thing I forgot to mention, is everything starts with an initial paid consultation. That is well, you're looking at $25 Canadian, so you're looking at half of that, and they for pounds. And so people come along, and this is a time for us to sit for an hour, for us to try the tutoring sessions, not try tutoring sessions, try to see if we can jive, which we will, no doubt. You'll like to get along with me, and I'll like to get along with you. I have no doubt about that. It's time for us to chat, get to know each other a little bit, and for you to tell me, hey, your stupid form doesn't work for me. I can't fill it out, but I want you to know what I need you to help me with. And I'll say, okay, let's jump on a Mac. Let's try to see if I can teach you a little bit, or let me demo something. You like my teaching style? Want me to do anything different? And then at the end, it's always you who decides. There's no commitment. It's like, I always say, here's the payment for the next lesson. The payment link for the next lesson comes to you. You can keep it for a month or a year and then decide, okay, I'm ready again. So you can even practice. And there's homework, there's suggested homework, but I mean, if you listen to it and you say, I had someone come through to me and say, you've given me homework, but really I've learned everything already. So I don't need to practice. I'm just going to come next time and we're going to move on. And then next time is going to come. And then what's going to happen is I always ask you, what would you like to, you know, we either come up with a learning plan during the initial consultation, or I ask you, you know, what you want to learn next. So this is as flexible as we can make it to be. It can even be refreshers or consultations. It could, or chats. It can be like, I already know this stuff pretty well, but I want to meet with you to make sure that I know this, that, and the other. You know, so it can really be anything you want.
Yeah, fantastic. Before we wrap up, do you want to just give us that website and the email address for people who are interested?
Yep. So you can just open up any browser, type in accessiblelearning.gumroad.com. Again, that's accessible learning, just like how it sounds. Then G-U-M, M as in Mary, R-O-A-D.com. Or if, you know, surfing and going on sites doesn't work for you yet, you can email V-O as in voiceover and then learninglounge@gmail.com. Type in whatever you're looking for. Oh, and even if you go to the shop, I've had people like this too. They go to the shop, they get really overwhelmed by all the lessons, and then they think, I want this one and this one, but you know what? Your payment system, like I can't get past it. Then write me and I'll make another link for purchase. So one way or another, the first step is, a lot of people just do this. They just write me, they ask for what they're looking for, and then and we go from there. And I do respond pretty quickly. So yeah, that's a way to, there isn't like a phone number or anything. It's just all via email. And yeah.
Well, Charmaine, it's been a great conversation. It's an absolutely fantastic resource. Keep in touch. I'd love to hear how this evolves.
Yeah, thank you so much. I will definitely keep in touch with you. And thank you so much for having me and letting me share my story about the Learning Lounge. Again, my goal is to solve as many tech problems for as many people as I can. So if I can even help just one person get well-versed with their tech, then it will really make doing what I do well worth it.
Amazing. Charmaine Coe, thanks for joining us. And that is us done for another week. Thank you so much, as always, for listening. If you like what you've heard, or if you've got any feedback or comments or questions, you're always welcome to get in touch. Drop us an email or a voice message to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. We'll be back with you same time, same place next week. But from me, Callum Stoneman, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran, bye for now.
Bye for now.
Bye.
See you next week.